The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we finished up a section in which we were discussing the idea that organisms, the evolutionary view of the fossil record is faulty in that we simply do not find intermediate species, which are absolutely essential to the idea of evolution. I'd like to go now to another of these general objections. This one simply the idea that on the other hand, there is an obvious lack of intermediate species. On the other hand, there is a very noticeable persistence of some species. And again, to go back to Darwin's statements, he makes the observation that some of these include the very organisms with which evolution is supposed to have occurred. Now, this is a quandary that we have talked about previously. What was the first form of life? Most evolutionists, I think, would argue that it's unicellular. Is it an autotroph or a heterotroph? And we discussed the options there and the difficulties with each of those. Seemingly, the neatest answer to the problem would be an autotroph, a cell that has the capability of manufacturing its own food. But these cells are much more complicated than cells that lack that ability. So if the only other choice really is a heterotroph, it would be the simplest cell. But the difficulty, of course, is that this type of cell depends on its food from other organisms. And so here is the dilemma. But there are fossils and of representatives of each of those cells, and there are live ones today, which is simply an example of the kind of thing we're talking about. I would argue that there are many more instances of organisms that have persisted, if we use evolutionary time, through hundreds of millions of years, than there are those that we have intermediate species for. And we could spend immense amounts of time discussing that. It's not my intent to do that, but I want at least to be sure and give some examples and some comments from evolutionists so that those of you who are creationists understand there is this idea is a legitimate objection. There is a marine organism known as Neopelina galathea, or galathea, I think some people pronounce it. This has been known in fossils for quite some time and was thought to be one of the organisms that simply had died out about 300 million years ago, if memory serves me correctly. Back in the last century, because of some deep sea exploration, there were live Neopelina galathea found. They're deep in the ocean, but they are alive today. Probably the single organism that has excited as much curiosity as any other is simply the coelacanth. The coelacanth is the lobe-finned fish that you will often see drawings of or pictures of. It seems to me these should have been around about 200 million years ago initially and were considered to be species that simply had died out. And by the way, if you take the total number of species that are found in the fossil record versus the total number of species that we have today, I read one evolutionary paleontologist, who was suggesting that two-thirds of the organisms that have been alive on the Earth have already died. Now, it would seem to me then, rather than being all perturbed over some of the organisms today that are disappearing, that this should make the evolutionists delighted, because it is simply evidence of proof for their evolution. There are some organisms that simply are not suitable in a particular environment and they die. But the coelacanth, the interesting part of the coelacanth story is that in the late 1930s, there was a fisherman off the coast of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean that caught a live coelacanth. Now, here is a discrepancy of about 200 million years. The interesting thing, you can see pictures. We have both slides and pictures of the coelacanth that was caught. And in particular, pictures showing the lobe fin. Now, the interesting thing is that in the evolutionist 200 million years, the lobe fin of the live coelacanth was no more developed toward a leg than the fossil ones were. Now, this is supposed to be the organism that belonged in our ancestral chain. This was that poor fish that was swimming around in the ocean and commiserating about the difficulties that were there and deciding how much better it would be if they would come up on dry land, and as a consequence of that began to develop lobe fin, which at some point in the evolutionary future were supposed to turn into legs. Well, you have the fossil coelacanth and you have the live ones, but the live ones, the fins, are no more further developed toward legs than they were in the original ones, which seems a little peculiar over that time frame. But again, we can find numbers of organisms. In the Bible science seminars that we've done, we have a series of slides we use simply to compare these kinds of things. I remember one comparing live, or at least recently picked, grape leaves with fossil grape leaves. They are identical to one another. The echinoderms, for those of you who don't recognize the term, these are the shellfish, the starfish. That is the phylum, at least. And we have a slide of fossil echinoderms, starfish, all sizes, shapes, colors, numbers of legs. But they, alongside this, are pictures of starfish that have been caught recently, recently being within the last, whatever, my lifetime, certainly. And again, we're talking here about the fossils that are supposed to be up toward 400 million years old. And they are identical with the ones that are still alive today. And it simply raises the questions of why in the world didn't they change if over that long period of time. A friend of mine and I made a trip up to Cornell 2 or 3 years ago, and my friend is very much interested in paleontology, and on our trip up and back, we stopped at various sites he had picked out and dug up fossils, and he had found notice of a place up on Chesapeake Bay. And although it wasn't exactly on our way, we stopped by and went out, finally found the place, went down onto the beach, and dug fossils. Now, we dug fossils out of a strata that, according to the people who were running the thing, were something like 130 million years old, as I recall. I happened to find, to dig out of that strata, a sand dollar. Now, many of you, I'm sure, know what sand dollars are, the little flat things that you will see washed up, at least see the skeleton of them washed up on the beach regularly. The live ones are sort of furry. They have a covering on them, including on the bottom part some legs, not legs, but appendages that allow them to sort of wiggle along. But I got the fossil echinoderm out of that stratum, and I also found some echinoderms that had washed up with the tide on the beach. They were identical to one another. I went through the very same thing with some scallop shells. I found a very interesting set of scallop shells where one was much bigger than the other. And yet we found some scallop shells again that were washed up on the beach, and they were identical. Now, these kinds of comparisons can go on and on and on and on. And the obvious question about them is, okay, fine. If evolution is universal, as the evolutionists claim it is, then why do we find so many instances of persistence of species? Now, when we get to fossils, we're going to talk about what is sometimes referred to as the Cambrian explosion. That series of deposits, the Cambrian strata, in which we find the first unquestioned fossils. And I use that word unquestioned for reasons we'll talk about. I am not personally aware of any unquestioned fossils prior to Cambrian, and that poses an immense problem for the evolutionists. And of course, many of them are indignant, or would be indignant over the statements. Of course, they're fossils before that. We'll talk about that a little bit. But here in those strata, you have, in the case of animals, there are fossil representatives of every animal phylum, every major animal phylum there. Now, why is that? Why, at that point, all of a sudden, do we find all of these fossils and an almost total, in my opinion, total lack of fossils in strata prior to that time? So you have these seeming contradictory observations that can be made. But you have those fossils that first appeared in Cambrian. When I was in graduate school, the dates for Cambrian, I think, were 600 million years, and modern evolutionists have dated them now to 530, 550 million years. We won't fuss over the few tens of millions of years. But there has been a change. But those organisms that appeared at that time, you can find fossil live representatives of the fossils today, and there are no detectable differences between them. I remember we had a Bible science seminar down in Florida several years ago, and we had a slide of a particularly interesting fly, Dipteran, a Dolichopodidae, and we showed the slide as part of our discussion in the Bible science seminar. While we had stopped for gas, one of these things flew in the car and was flying around inside our car. And it was identical to the one that we had the fossilized picture of that was supposed to be, I think, something over 100 million years old. And as I say, these kinds of examples can go on interminably, but they simply are the basis for a legitimate question for the evolutionist. Why is this? If evolution is change and supposedly universal change, why do we find literally thousands of organisms that have persisted using evolutionary dates for extremely long periods, tens, hundreds of millions of years, with no change at all? Now, I'm sure there would be responses. Well, they were in environments that didn't change very much. Okay, fine. But if there were environments that didn't change very much, then there's not supposed to be change in any other organism as well. And if you're trying to find change from unicellular to folks, then there would have to be the necessity of constant environmental changes. And yet these persistent species give evidence of the fact that that has not at all been what has happened.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.